This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Trainer Todd Pletcher has reached the stratosphere.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Moon over Miami for Bill Mott.
3,000 for trainer Mark Cassie.
Trainer D-Way Lucas, a 6th win.
And Bob Baffert with another incredible milestone.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Win number 1,000 for the great Trevor McCarthy.
Here's 2,000 for Nick Zito.
Steve Aspison is now North America's all-time leading trainer.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone. Happy Wednesday. And once again, welcome to the show trainers listen to, Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to be with you for the next hour all across North America. Sirius 219, XM 201, and of course, streaming live and podcast on our HRRN website at horseracingradio.net. Well, today's guest began training on her own in 2010. She comes off of her best season as a trainer in 2020, with her runners earning more than $522,000. The homepage of her racing stable's website shows three words at the top of her description: passionate, ambitious, committed. And I think you're going to find over the course of the next hour with this conversation that those words are extremely accurate. Please join me in welcoming trainer Michael Ewing to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Michael, appreciate the visit.
Oh, thanks for having me, Mike.
Yeah, excited to hear your story. Just curious, I mentioned her and she as I was doing the introduction, and then I introduced you as Michael. How often do you get people calling and saying, is he available?
All the time. And people constantly correct me when I call for something, you know, and I'll say, this is Michael Ewing. And they'll say, well, we, you know, how are you? And we need to, if I'm calling about something for me, they say, well, we need to talk to him. And they'll just keep saying, but we need Michael Ewing. And I'll keep saying, but I am Michael Ewing. It gets very confusing. So I always have to throw in, I am a woman. But I don't think these days Michael is so unusual. I mean, I hear of other Michaels as women, so I don't know. But I was the first of five from a former football player. My dad played in the Rose Bowl for UCLA, and his passion was football. And he thought he would, if you had a family, you would just get boys, and they'd all play football. And nothing is better revenge than a chauvinist having four daughters and then just one son who was too small to play football. So there you go.
What year did your dad play in the Rose Bowl?
I think it was 1954. They played Michigan, I know, and he had loved UCLA's football program. He played for Red Sanders. We were taken to every football game and every basketball game. That was during the era of John Wooden. And he was passionate, thought he'd go into football coaching, but that didn't happen. But we were raised with all these sayings from his football days when Red Sanders was his coach. And and then his later years, when I went out on my own and was training, he took great pleasure in telling me, you know, watching everything on TVG and then telling me, oh, I should call the jockeys in and put them in front of a whiteboard and explain how it was all going to go. And I'd say, yeah, you know, this isn't football, Dad. It's not football. But he was always a coach. He was always, even for horse racing, which he really did not get, other than he was interested in what I was doing. He always wanted to coach. So maybe that's where I'm a coach for horses. Maybe that's where it comes from.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I was thinking the same thing. So many times when trainers are doing an interview with me, we'll talk about the fact that they really are a coach, and their job is to work with young talent and develop them, much the way a basketball or a football coach would do.
Well, you know, that's true. And it is funny that my favorite part I wouldn't say I'm a claiming trainer at all. I love the babies. I love the two-year-olds. I love buying the yearlings and then getting them in early, after they've had 60, 90 days. And I am at a training center so we can, you know, finish them up there and do works there and gate works. And I love seeing them develop, mature, come along and start their careers. And you have always great hope. And then maybe great disappointment. But it is a game of hope. And every year you're renewed by those new babies and young talent or no talent that may be coming into your barn. And you're always hoping for that big horse. I'm still hoping for that big horse. I'm forever optimistic. You just can't not be in this game and survive. But I love the whole training part of it, the whole... Sometimes I think I would just train and train and train and never run because they're never quite there for me sometimes. But they've all got to run at some point. But I'm always concerned that they're well prepared and fit enough before they start that first race. But that's the part I love versus the claiming, which I do have some claiming horses and love that and like to see them do better if we can, but I do really love the babies.
Yeah, the other way that I've heard trainers describe themselves outside of being a coach is they become almost like a proud parent watching their kids grow up when they're working with the young horses and they see them develop and then they see them do well on the racetrack. They become like a proud parent. Is that an accurate description too?
I think very much so, especially many of us, but someone like me who, I've had a love for horses from an early, early age. I've always been passionate about horses, and I've been in many disciplines. So that horse love pervades everything. And they're like kids because they're as different as your own children, too, or as you think they're all the same, but they're so different. People will say, do horses like this? Well, yes, in general, maybe they do. But some horses love a routine. Some horses like to do something else. Some horses love a big hack around. We're at the training center. We can hack around the fields and get them off the racetrack. And some of them just really relish that. You know, some need to train hard. Some need to train lighter. Some are nervous, some are so calm. So, I mean, there's, some are crabby and just say, leave me alone. I want to stand in the back of my stall and not be bothered. Others are always looking for a treat or attention. And yeah, they're really, and that's our job as a trainer, is to figure out how to motivate every horse and how to work best with that horse, what makes him tick. What will give us our best effort. So it's always a challenge because, as we all know, they don't talk to us, and the way they talk to us is in their behavior. And so I think all of us have to be what we call those horse whisperers in a certain way, being paying attention to detail. What is when they're really feeling good, what is their manner? What is their behavior? How are they eating? And when they change from that, you notice those little changes, and you try and get back to where they're really coming out of their skin or being how they really are when they're training well. So it's always a challenge. So it's never the same, even though it seems like you're training every day and the training, they're galloping or they're jogging. But it's not. Every horse is so different. And that always is the fun of it, and the excitement always looking forward to the next year. And even this year, I have 2-year-olds who I always call it the baby owies. We thought they'd run early and they didn't because, they just got a little sore. They said, I'm not ready for this. I need to grow up. So they had time off. They're coming back in the barn now. So they'll run as 3-year-olds. And it's the same thing. They still haven't run. They haven't performed. It's all about their future. So I love seeing that, and I love being a part of that.
When you start working with those young horses, Michael, how long does it typically take you to figure out the right buttons to push for each individual horse?
That's a good question. Well, I would say, you know, they come in, and of course, as you train on and you're getting them fitter and working and starting their works, you're still figuring them out because they're going through a whole new process again. But, I mean, to get to know how, when that horse is feeling good and eating well, you know, I think you begin to get a good feel of them, you know, after 30 days or what you're really galloping on and training. Because, you know, when they're just in the barn and they're not doing much, they'll each have their own personality, but, how they're taking to that training, you know, when it's easy, it's much simpler. Although they'll still show that nervousness if they're nervous, and it'll tell you one needs to go with the pony or needs company. But, you know, within 30 days, I think you have a good feeling for it. But I think it still develops as you're going along and training hard. Obviously, by the time I think you get to the races, pretty much you know how that horse is performing at home and what he likes and doesn't like and what works. But then you get to the races and it's a whole other thing because, you know, you can work with three horses or whatever, but you can't replicate a race. And I'm always saying, you know, the first race, some horses need more of an education. Some horses go in and they win first time out and they're mature, they get it, they're fit. And others kind of have to go along and are a little overwhelmed by all of the activity and what's going on. And so if you like a horse, I always think, too, you know, that first race can't determine his future. For me, anyway. I'm not one to give up. I don't give up lightly. You know, there is a point at which you have to say, you know, this horse needs to drop, this horse needs to do something else. But you always have, you know, different surfaces. A horse may not run well on dirt, and you put him on the grass, and he's a different horse. Is he long or is he short? And it takes a little time sometimes to figure things out. So it's a process. I couldn't really put a time limit on it, but it's a process.
Yeah, much like each horse, the process is an individual process with each of the horses that Michael Ewing works with in her training career. And I am visiting with Michael Ewing here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. If you see her in the program, it will read Michael Ann Ewing so that you understand that she is indeed female. And she told you that story at the beginning of the program here today. Michael, you mentioned that young horses will do things that babies do. They will get sore. They will buck shins. And for a trainer who spends so much time trying to get these horses to develop and bring them along, and even for the owners that are involved, how challenging is it to stay positive and keep the faith when things like that, that you know are going to happen, keep showing up and you have to keep going, you know, two steps back, one step forward type of scenario?
Well, that you just described it. It is two steps forward, one step back.
Yeah,
very
yeah.
often. But I'm optimistic. I think the hardest part is, quite frankly, is sometimes when you have owners that really understand that these are athletes. It's easy because when you say, you know, your horse needs to go out, he's just not handling this. When you have an owner that's okay, let's do it, has the best interest of the horse in mind, that's really easy. And I think most people do have the best interest of the horse in mind, but I think they just get anxious because they have a lot of money involved. And because I don't have big owners, you know, we're just a small barn. We have homebreds, or we have horses that have, you know, 12 people, partnerships of 12 people or so, and they have one horse, and they have time and money invested, and, you know, one has to go out. It's a big deal for them. But I think I'm lucky that I have good owners, but I think the pressure comes for me from telling them, you know, wanting to keep them happy, if you will, but it's not hard for me to say this horse needs to go out. I mean, you know, we may slow down, we may try something else, but in essence, you know, if a horse is sore and not getting better. And obviously he's going to go out and get some time, because I'm just, you would never come to me to press a horse to run, because I'm just not that person. And so I may not fit some people's program, but because they'll run when they're right for me, and when they're ready, and they'll train when they're ready. So, but it is sometimes frustrating when you have, you know, things run in cycles. You have a bad year, and it seems like this year, you know, everybody was having trouble with shins, maybe in one particular year, and we had to slow down with everybody, or somebody, you know, a bunch had to go out. It seems to go, some years are great, and other years are just, you want to put your head in a bucket of sand and not look up. But I, to tell you the truth, Mike, if I didn't get up and go to the barn and have that, and have those horses, I don't know what I'd do. It's always been in my life. Horses have always been there since I was a young girl. And for me, that is my focus and my passion. And when I used to show horses, I used to be enamored. We'd be at these big AAA shows in Del Mar, California, which is where I'm from, California.
Yeah.
And they'd have they'd show these little cart horses, these saddlebreds pulling carts or whatever, and these older ladies would be, you know, driving them, or older gentlemen. And I always thought, oh, well, when I can't ride anymore, you know, I'll just show in a cart. They can just drag me around. But, and of course, I'm not riding so much anymore, you know, except for the pony, which quite frankly, I don't get on that often anymore. But I just will always, I can't imagine not getting up and having that and having a goal. I've always been very goal-oriented, always. And I love the competition, so my love of horses has always been around competition, because I was never the person that, I just wouldn't own a horse and go out to ride on the trail for fun. If I went for a trail ride, it would be because my horse is, it would be good for my horse, good for his mind, let him down, let him do something else. In fact, sometimes we've even taken some of our racehorses out to Masterson Station here and hobnobbed around the trails there at Masterson Station, their little arena, and taken them over some little jumps just to do something different with those horses that, you know, are running maybe at lower levels and just need to get some exercise, but they don't need to do much. Yeah, I can't imagine my life without horses.
It's so funny to hear you say that, because one of the questions that I always love to ask trainers on this program, and I do it almost every show because the answers are, they can be so diverse. I always like to ask trainers, if they weren't involved with horses, if they weren't doing this for a living, what else? What other profession? What else might you be doing, Michael, if it wasn't for the fact that you're involved with horses now? What other things could you do? Would you do?
What do you mean? For a profession or just...
Yeah, because if you weren't working with horses, what other job might you be doing?
Could I work with show horses? What other job?
See, it's all about the horses, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I graduated from college, I was showing horses and I was a banker. I went to work for Lloyd's Bank in California, which is now defunct, and I was in their management training program. And I would drive my, because I came from a family in Pasadena, California. No one had ever been into horses. They all thought, they could not understand my passion. And my parents gave in when I was just a little girl and signed me up for Pony Club. So that's how I started. But I would drive, I'd be in my little banker suit, and I'd drive my silver pickup down Wilshire Boulevard with the hay blowing out the back. I'd park it at Lloyd's Bank, jump out with my little briefcase because I had just come back from a horse show. I'd be, you know, take off after work at 6 o'clock on a Friday, and I'd drive to Reno, Nevada and show my horses and drive back, get in at 3 o'clock in the morning, take a shower and go to work. So, maybe I'd go back into banking. I don't know, but I don't know what I'd do. For me, it's always been horses.
Yeah, and every successful trainer that comes on this program, from Richard Mandela to Bill Mott to Todd Pletcher. You ask them about those things, and you ask them, you know, what other hobbies and interests they have. And every successful trainer will tell you, this is it. This is my life. This is what I love. Yes, I may watch a baseball game from time to time or a football game, but this is it. This is all I have time to do. It's all consuming. Would you agree?
I would totally agree. And I guess when I retire, then I'll just show horses. I don't know. Because sometimes I'm always watching the reining horses here in Kentucky and all over. And I think, oh, well, you know, would I have time to get, I think, oh, I'm going to buy another reiner, and I think I'd like to do a little showing or just something. But then, you know, the reason you don't do it is you don't have time, because the racehorses are all consuming. But sometimes I think about it. But, you know, like I would have any extra time, the poor thing, he'd end up a pony on the racetrack. That's what would happen.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's all about horses. Although my background is different from a lot of people that grew up around racing, because I didn't. As I say, my parents knew nothing about horses, and I started in pony club and, you know, showed horses for years, and really got interested in racing. It was probably around 2000. Well, before that, I got really exposed. My father would take me because he was an advertising exec. He had a company, advertising company, and he did the advertising for Santa Anita when Robert Stroud was there.
Okay.
And he came up with the Great Race Place that his company did.
Oh, wow.
And so we used to go to the races, and which I loved. But at that time, too, I was busy horse showing. So it wasn't until I was married and we were at Santa Anita when my husband said to me, like around 2000, he said, you know, I'd love to get a racehorse. And I said, a racehorse? Wow. But, you know, I just was kind of floored. I said, well, I don't know anything about them. Horses are horses, but the disciplines are so different. And I was showing at the time. I had several reiners and quarter horses, showed all around the country. And we got this in a partnership. We had met Bob Hess at a company function they were having at Santa Anita. And we decided to buy a two-year-old at Ocala, a two-year-old sale. And we went in on a partnership with three of us on this little $20,000 horse. And the first time he brought it back to Santa Anita after it got broke, and I think it was in about 2003 maybe, and I went out to see it, the first time on the backside really in the whole thing, and I was fascinated. And I said, well, I'm a horse woman. I can't just own a racehorse and not understand this whole game. So I started, and I was really fascinated, so I started showing up, and I'm sure Bob Hess wanted to just shoo me away. Oh, my God, this really annoying owner, she's just hanging around. But I wanted to learn. I said, put me to work. So, you know, I'd hot walk, I'd groom. And as I got more and more interested, my showing, I just had this real attraction to the racing. And I started to say, you know, I want to get into this. I want to do this like full steam. And I just spent more and more time. My showing went by the wayside. You know, my reiners, one or two, became pony horses. And I worked. We had a horse or two with Bob, but I worked for him, too, as hot walker, then grooming, then a foreman, and then an assistant for many years until I went on my own. And because I became all consumed. I think I'd ridden all my life and shown, but this was a whole new game that I really got fascinated with. And so I was off to the races, which my father was horrified because he thought that was just not the thing for a young lady. You know, I came up pretty protected, I suppose, grew up. And he just thought, you're going around the backside, this is just like, this is all men around there. And he thought it was a rough thing, you know. But I loved it. I loved every minute of it and still do.
Still do. Still going strong. Talking with trainer Michael Ewing here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. We're about 2 minutes away from our commercial break here at the bottom of the hour, and we're going to continue this conversation in the second half of the program. But, Michael, I want to ask about those other disciplines that you mentioned and how you got started with Pony Club and then went through the show process. Are there things that you now can take away from those experiences that maybe help you when you're working with racehorses?
Yes. Absolutely. I know there's a lot of people that never rode or seriously rode that train. They do great jobs. But I think if you've ridden and you've ridden in serious disciplines, you really have an understanding of mechanics and how a horse feels. And I think that's really important when we talk about winning races by a nose. When a horse is using himself correctly, and in frame and pushing from behind and not pulling himself, and his back is up, he's much more efficient. And I think that makes a huge, big difference in, maybe staying a little healthier because he's using his body more correctly. Although I always think racing, why they don't allow you to train both ways or have Monday, Wednesday, Friday go to the right and the other way left, because you you know, you only use one side of the horse becomes stronger going to the left always, and also takes the brunt of the wear and tear. But, yes, knowing how a horse should use himself is a big thing. I have a great respect for a good rider. I don't think just any rider will do, especially when you're developing young horses and so forth. I think it's great, but it's difficult to find exercise riders today who can gallop and work and understand mechanics of a horse and then as well ride babies and ride the kooky horses and the horses that need a light touch. But I think your rider's really important. People laugh at me because they always say, Michael, this is not a show horse barn. But I used to have a groom who accused me of having barn of the blankets. He called it, this is the barn of the blankets, because I had a lot of show horses, and of course we show all year, and they're under lights and under blankets so they don't grow any hair, so which I've adapted to my barn. So you know, horses have heavy blankets, medium blankets, light sheets, and according to the temperature I'm like, take off the sheets, put on the medium, or take, you know, as long as they're not sweating. And in winter, especially here in Kentucky, this has worked really well because, you know, when you have a lot of hair on your horse, it's hard to train. I mean, in the winter, they get sweaty, and they don't dry off for a long time, but it's so cold. So they get a lot of, they stay wet after training, and they get a lot of, their hair coats are dirty. You really can't, give them full baths. So I keep my horses under automatic lights during the winter. They're on 16 hours of timed light.
Huh.
So they don't grow hair, and blankets. So actually, I don't body clip anybody. They stay pretty slick, just like they are in summer.
That's incredible. I've never heard anybody say that before. Talking with Michael Ewing on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Michael, do have to get to a quick commercial break. Stay with me. We'll come back. We'll talk more about your story and some of the horses that you've been around over the years, including a horse that about a month ago put you in the national headlines, but not the way you'd like to be. We'll talk about that next. Our second half of Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton comes up next on HRN. Stay with me.
Nominations are still open for the Fasic Tipton November sale, the world's premier breeding stock event. Last year, the sale produced the 8 highest-priced fillies and mares sold at any U.S. breeding stock sale, led by Monomoy Girl, selling for $9.5 million. 22 horses sold for $1 million or higher, and the sale also produced the co-highest-priced weanling sold in the U.S. last year. Nominate your best today to the Fasic Tipton November sale, a night of stars, Tuesday, November 9th in Lexington, Kentucky. Where will you sell? The richest meet in Oak Lawn's history begins Friday, December 3rd through Sunday, May 8th. The 66-day meet will offer more than $45 million in purses with 36 stakes races totaling $12.3 million. And all allowance races are now worth $100,000. Oak Lawn boasts the richest Triple Crown Prep Series in the country, highlighted by the $1 million Rebel on Friday, February 26th, and the Grade 1 Arkansas Derby Saturday, April 2nd, now offering a purse of $1.25 million. Learn more at oaklawn.com.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And now they're making their way toward the quarter pole, where it is Gypsy King and Dreamer's Disease. It's these two who continue to run 1-2. Pivotal Mission is moving up alongside of them. In the center, Indy Taurus is putting in a bid, too. And from the back of the pack, really slow, trying to get involved in behind them. They're into the final furlong, still wide open here. Pivotal Mission, the leader. Indy Taurus moves up on the outside. Now down toward the inside, Barrister Tom is fighting on. Barrister Tom in front. On the outside, Pivotal Mission. These two now coming down to the wire. Barrister Tom's got it. Barrister Tom to win from Pivotal Mission. Then Indy Taurus and Shoddy.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna visiting with trainer Michael Ewing, and that was a huge win for Michael Ewing in the stable last year. Larry Colmas had the call. The More Than Ready Juvenile Stakes at Kentucky Downs last September. It was September 7th, and big win for Barrister Tom. We'll talk more about Barrister Tom and some of the other horses that Michael has had the privilege to be around in her career. We'll do that in a minute, right after I remind you that if you did miss any portion of this Trainer Talk show, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, a podcast going to be available shortly after we finish up here tonight, and you can listen to this show and all of our Trainer Talk shows, horseracingradio.net, and of course Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts, you'll be able to tune in and hear this conversation with Michael Ewing. Michael, that call from Larry had to bring back some wonderful memories from last September. What an effort by Barrister Tom.
Yeah, it was fabulous. It was actually not this September, yes, but last September.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was pretty exciting. I would say it's my biggest win to date. And it was wonderful to do it with a homebred. And totally unexpected. I mean, I thought he would do well. But he went off at 44-1, getting no respect. And I remember it was a really hot day, and it was, you know, pandemic, we're all in masks, it's hot and miserable. And he'd run once on the dirt short when I started him, which I didn't think was his thing, but it's always, I like to start them short unless they just have no speed. And he was horrible. So then I sent him to Arlington, and he won a maiden special there on the grass easily, gate to wire. And of course, that's Arlington. It's not, you know, the toughest, like, you know, Churchill or Kentucky Downs or Keeneland. But he was two, and I said, let's just throw him in. I don't think you can be afraid to try it. You can't be afraid to lose, or you'll just never, you know, do anything. I mean, you've just got to try sometimes. And I had faith in him, but he went off at 44-1. And I remember Tyler Bays was having a terrible day. And he had done so well in Arkansas that year and came to Churchill. And I think we had some new people who'd come out to Churchill and Keeneland, new riders from California. And it's, you know how it is. It's always the new thing. It's the big thing. Same with stallions, you know, at the sales. The new stallions are the big stallions. Everybody wants one. Same kind of with jockeys sometimes, I think.
Yep.
And Tyler wasn't doing as well, and he was saying to me as I'm legging him up, oh, I'm going back to California, Michael. I just haven't had a good couple meets here. Can't win a race. Oh, and I kind of looked at my husband, and I said, oh boy, this isn't a good sign. And that little old, and my husband is meanwhile complaining. Never take your husband, really. Every once in a while, he's great. He drives down there, but he's saying, oh, it's so hot down here, you know, and the horse doesn't have a shot. And I said, oh, yes, he does. Yeah, just give it a, you know, give it a shot. Just see what happens. And horse won, and we were just thrilled. I mean, just thrilled. He just put in a great effort. It was my biggest win for my career. And he was just this little homebred, what do they say, you know, by truck and trailer? I mean, he was out of a Artie Schiller who, you know, was just a kind of a working horse stud and went off to stud somewhere else out of the country. And out of a mare I had run who was a nice little claiming allowance mare, Taylor Lane. And, I had raised him and had him since he was a baby, and it was just really super. Now, I wish he'd go on and replicate that. My problem since has been that he is so aggressive in a race that it's kind of his most recent rides before he had some time off here were, you know, fighting him. And so he's about due to start, hopefully, at Keeneland here. And my instructions will be we pulled his blinkers off and just go. Because I always think when you fight a horse and try and wrestle him back, you know, if they go, they may get tired and quit anyway. But if you wrestle them back, they use up that energy. They're not going to finish anyway. So like you're saying, we're talking about babies and trying to figure out what works. Tom is lightly raced and still trying to figure out what's going to work for his next career. Maybe that was his biggest win ever and he's not going to be stakes quality, but he had some time off here, and so we're bringing him back, and we'll hopefully run him in at Keeneland. So I'm hoping he can do well. But I was really proud of him. That was a big win for us that day for our little barn, a big win and really exciting. And honestly, if that horse never does anything else, I'm happy with him.
I love the fact, Michael, that you said you can't be afraid to try, right, to take a shot. Now, you want to run horses where they belong, but occasionally if you think a horse has potential, you run them in a spot like the Juvenile Stakes at Kentucky Downs, as you did with Barrister Tom, and sometimes it pays off. And I can remember that was always the Dwayne Lucas philosophy, and he could pull a rabbit out of a hat with the best of them. But as he always said, you're not going to win it if you're not in it. You have to take a shot.
I don't know Dallas Stewart well at all, but I always think of him.
As
that, you know, the guy that's
a Lucas disciple,
he pulls it off all the time.
Yeah, he subscribes to the same philosophy, you know, coming from that Lucas training tree. He's very much cut from the same cloth. He'll take a shot any time, and oftentimes, even if he doesn't win, he's finishing second, he's finishing third with a horse that might be much like Barrister Tom, 40+1.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, it's funny. I always think the Equibase stats are kind of not so great in a sense for trainers. They're all concerned about their stats. Obviously, I don't care about them. I have a small barn. Every horse is precious to me. It's not like, and they're precious to their owners. They have one horse or maybe a couple. And they don't have, most in my barn don't have, unlimited funds we're small time owners. And, we do run a lot, giving him a chance. You know, well, we haven't tried turf. We haven't tried long, you know, before we start dropping down. So I probably give horses more chances than most. And if I really like a horse, yeah, I'll just throw him in and see what might happen. Or even a placing. You know, you place in that more than ready Juvenile Stakes at Kentucky Downs, you know, third place is huge, and plus your stakes placed, and I have the mare, so, you know, that was her first fall, Tom. So, you can't be afraid to try. You just can't let getting beat, stop you from doing something.
Yeah, yeah. Talking with Michael Ewing here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. I want to ask you about a horse, a filly, that has not won a race yet. She's a two-year-old filly. She put you in the headlines nationally last month, and again, not for the reason that you would necessarily want to be in the national headlines, but I'm talking about Bold and Bossy, who in the post parade heading to the starting gate at Ellis Park tossed the rider, got loose, ran down the interstate, and thankfully was rescued without incident. But oh my gosh, Michael, I can't even imagine what was going through your mind as you're watching this all unfold.
Well, you're right. That is not a reason to be known. but Maybe because it is still going on. We're still doctoring her, and she's still recovering. But maybe it's good for some in racing that pay attention because they realize that these horses aren't thrown away, that, you know, we take good care of them. And, of course, she had those two. She ran, you know, did that whole run down the road. She ran out of her shoes, literally. Her feet just were in a mess and dehydrated. And then she stayed overnight, and we had the barn fire. So my experience with burns was nada before then. And because she still had all this hair on her back and everywhere, it was dimpling. I didn't really think she was burned. But I've learned more about burns since then. I thought, you know, your hair would be off and you'd see burns right away. But no, it's as we've, over time in this past month, we've had to kind of debride her back, and she's actually burned all on her top line. And but she will recover, but she's still, she's still in special shoes. We have the podiatrist coming every week to check on her. And we still can't turn her out because she can't really be in the sun. And we can't turn her out at night either because she's still kind of dealing with her feet. But the feet are looking good. I'm hoping that in a couple of weeks she'll be back kind of in regular shoes and they will be doing pretty well. And maybe then at night she could get some turnout. But it was a crazy ride. Never say never. Who thinks when you're sending your baby filly off to the races, this is not the scenario that you think is going to happen? I mean, at the worst, you think, oh, she's going to run badly, or maybe she'll break badly. And when I saw her sort of fall down and kind of flip over and Miguel went off and she got loose, I thought, oh, you know, this is not a good experience. She'll be loose on the track and they'll catch her, but we'll take her home. But she'll be scratched and we'll have to come back and try again another day. When my assistant, Kelsey Wallace, called and said, she's gone, I thought, what do you mean she's gone? Because I was here in Lexington. She said, no, she's gone from the racetrack. No one can find her. And as you're saying at that moment, what goes through your mind is she's running down the road somewhere and, you know, you think she will be hit by a car. That's what you think is going to happen. How can it not happen?
Yeah.
And then you think she'll be hit by a car and she'll be hurt or killed and someone else will be hurt. It's really frightening, but, and to think it took 30 minutes to find her and catch her. I mean, you really could have followed all those videos that were popping up all over from people filming her as they drove by her down the road.
Yeah.
Too bad they didn't have a GPS on their Facebook live video, you know, to say where they were. But it was crazy, but she's home and she's doing well and she has a big fan base and who knows what her future will bring, but she'll have a happy life, whatever that will be, whether it's racing or, you know, as a show horse or someone's trail ride or just a pasture horse. I don't know what it'll be. It's too early to say.
Well, and you mentioned, Michael, all of the physical things that she's going to need to overcome. But how about the mental side of this? Can an incident like that really affect a young horse mentally?
I would think so, it would. And she was always just a little bit quirky. So I guess we'll have to see. First, I think determining how she heals from those burns, will we be able to put a saddle on her? Will there be too much scar tissue? That'll be number one. And then sometimes I think, you know, maybe I shouldn't even try. I go back and forth with her, and I think no decisions have to be made, but maybe I shouldn't try and race her. I mean, wouldn't it be a great story if she came back and she raced and she won?
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of attention on her. What if she raced and something else happened? So maybe that's, I don't know. That would be, I just can't imagine that she could have any worse luck than she's already had.
But she did like her job. When she trained, the filly trained hard. She was strong. She liked her job when she went out and trained. She'd rather train on the racetrack than walk around the barn. But we'll have to see because, yeah, that would be a concern is the mental, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. But, boy, how great would it be if she would return and she would win? Who knows if she would turn out to be some really great racehorse, right? Some tremendous filly. And they'd have to make a movie about this, wouldn't they?
Well, they could, I guess. But, I mean, she wasn't a maiden claiming race, Mike.
Right.
So I don't know about
right.
a really great horse. She's just a nice little filly that I had purchased at Fasic Tipton because I wanted a couple horses that I thought would be early. And I thought she would be early. But, they just didn't work out this year that they really said to me, you know, I want to go in March. So I was excited to get her to the races because she was training really well, and I thought we had a really good shot in that spot. But the forces out there said, no, Michael, not today, and no, Bossy, we're not going to do that. So we'll see. You know, nothing has to be decided now. We just take each day with her as it comes, and I'm just looking forward to giving her some time outside soon rather than just, you know, walking the shed row and – we have to be careful. She's in special shoes. They can't get wet, so she can't even go out when the grass is dewy to be hand grazed. So she can only be hand grazed when it's dry, but then we can't hand graze her when it's sunny either. So she's a little bit limited right now in what she can do, but she's happy. She's eating, and I think in a couple weeks maybe we can turn her out. Luckily, we're on the at the Thoroughbred Center that's owned by Keelan.
Yep.
And I have paddocks there, so my racehorses get to go out which side, which is great. A lot of them, instead of, you know, walking the shed row after they race, they go out from, say, 9 to 3 on a nice day every day in their paddocks. And so they all get some grass time. And I do have a small round pen in one of the paddocks that's adjustable, so I could put her out there as soon as, you know, and sort of start to transition her to the farm as soon as she can go out a little bit. But it'll be just at night, I think, for a while.
You mentioned the name of your assistant, Kelsey Wallace. As a small operation, I know that you rely on a family atmosphere and a team atmosphere. Tell me more about Kelsey and why she's so valuable to you and to your operation.
Well, she's just great. She's been with me about 5 years, and I met her because she was galloping for me as freelance here on the racetrack, putting herself through UK. And she had worked on the racetrack in Maryland some growing up in her late teen years. She had groomed and run horses and galloped there, and she had grown up showing horses, and her mom had a farm there in Maryland. And she had originally started, I think, at Boston College, thinking she'd be an attorney like her father. And she had just said, you know, I can't do this. I'm going to pack up, load up. I want to be with horses. And she put everything in her car, and she decided to go to UK, find a job, put herself through school. And she did. She just came to Lexington knowing no one, not knowing where she was going to stay. I think she stayed in the hotel for a couple weeks, found a job, you know, applied to UK, and put herself through their equine management program there. And she graduated and then got a great job on the farm, breeding farm, and, you know, 5 days a week, a nice salary for someone who's graduated and is in the equine industry, you know, full benefits, Monday or Saturday and Sunday off. And I had a great assistant at the time who wanted to move to California. And I put out the word that I was looking for someone new, and Kelsey showed up. And I felt like her mother. I said, oh, Kelsey, why would you want this job? This is like 16 hours a day. It's 7 days a week. I mean, I do give everybody off a day a week, but, you know, sometimes you do have to work a day off. I always say the assistants are the hardest working people on the track. because they're there all the hours, all the time. And I said, you know, you're going to take a cut in pay. You know, you're not going to have full benefits, only one day off a week. But she said she really missed the track and the excitement and the goal and the excitement of seeing all that, you know, effort you put into a horse and they run well or they win. And so she started with me 5 years ago. She had a lot of experience on the track, not as an assistant, but she's really sharp. She's really entrepreneurial. And she, 5 years now, she knows what I'm going to say before it comes out of my mouth. And she's a very good horsewoman. And she's, yeah, really great. And she's a woman who could go on her own at any time. Where she could manage, you know, a 60-horse barn for a big outfit. But I hope she chooses not to because I would really miss her. She's a great assistant, and she does all the heavy hauling. We have our own truck and trailer, so most of the time, mostly have horses running at different tracks, she'll leave early and take our horse or horses that are running. And, you know, they always have to be in early at Churchill or Keeneland or Ellis Park or wherever it is, Indiana. So she'll leave and she'll take the horses and run down and she'll saddle and run them. She does a lot of that. So she's the, also could be a truck driver, I suppose, in her, she wanted a different career because she's on the road a lot. But yeah. She's great. And she gets along with all of our help, many of whom are, who've worked with us for many years. So it is not like a family. Whether or not you're a Hillary Clinton supporter, doesn't matter. But she did say, I think years ago, something like it takes a village. And that's how I do feel about our training barn. It's not one person. It's everybody together. Our hot walkers, our grooms, showing up every day, paying attention to those horses, saying to myself, geez, you know, I just took the bandages off. You haven't looked at this horse yet. But Michael, there's some filling here I don't like, or he's got this or that. They're the first ones there. We always have a couple eyes on the horses. You know, Kelsey and I are there every day. We don't leave the barn unattended per se. It's always Kelsey or I there. So we're always supervising training and, it's a village, and I'm so grateful to the help I have that shows up every day. They're great guys. They show up when they're not feeling so well. And in this time when it's so difficult to get help and good help, I just rely on – I feel very fortunate for everyone on our team, and it is a team effort.
Yeah, Trainer Michael Ewing here on Trainer Talk presented by Faisic Tipton. Coming down to the final furlong, if you will, Michael, we are about 5 minutes away from the end of the program, but I want to give you a chance to talk about maybe another horse that has kind of touched your heart over the years that you're never going to forget. Is there another horse that we haven't talked about that just stands out to you for whatever reason?
That was mine or in my barn?
Yeah, or just a horse that you've been around.
Well, I don't know if one has, I suppose they all touch my heart quite a bit. I would say I had a horse that was my first, and she was mine, because I do have some of my own and then train for others. I think people often think that they're all my own, or I only train for myself, but that's not true. But I had a horse, a little horse, Ears to You, who had the longest ears. She looked like a donkey. And she was, I had her since she was a baby, bought her as a baby. And she, I remember her fondly. She was just, you know, most of these that I'm talking about are just claiming horses or little allowance horses. She was just somehow touched my heart. She was personality. And so I had another horse, Limestone Edge. He was a really nice horse. Bob Hess trained him, and then we claimed him from, which was okay with that owner at the time, Terry Lanny, who's now gone. And I love this horse. In fact, someone told me when they filmed Secretariat here at Keeneland, I should have put him in as a double. He's a big, beautiful chestnut horse. And he was an allowance winner and a nice horse, minor stakes horse. He's since retired. He went to a really good home. But, oh, my God, he was a goofball. And I remember a video keeps showing up on my Facebook every once in a while. He would open the tack trunk next to him from his stall, and he knew where the peppermints were, and he managed to open the top of the trunk, and I have this video of him, and he'd go in and find, dig in, make a mess out of the tack trunk and find the peppermints. And just like eat and chew on them all with the wrappers on them. I mean, he was really, you know, you just remember these horses that touch your heart. Honestly, so many, and I have so many, and then they get claimed, and we've had them since they were, you know, we bought them as yearling, and we've had them in the barn since they were two, that I wish I could claim them all back when I see them kind of running down and so forth. You know, I always kind of think about, you know, at what point should I reach out and grab this horse? I saw recently that the Metz's, Zoe Metz and Jeff Metz had just claimed or had finally taken Rock and a Hard Place back. Jenny Earhart went down and picked him up. I think there was, he had broken a fracture of sesamoid or something. And Jeff Metz had been here for a couple last year, 2 years ago. And I'd had this horse in the barn just for him for a couple of months because he ran him in Kentucky for a little bit. So I sort of acted as his assistant. But I remember that horse. I was so touched, and it was nice to see that they took the horse and apparently are going to rehome him, which is great.
Yeah, those stories, Michael, those stories are so unbelievable. And I hate to cut you short. We're getting ready to wrap up the program here coming up on the end of the show. But really appreciate the visit here this morning. It has been such a delight to hear your story and to look back on your career. And want to wish you all the best moving forward, Michael. Thank you so much for the visit.
Mike, thanks so much.
All right, Michael Ewing here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. If you missed any portion, head to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast at your leisure. Now for my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios, for my special guest, Michael Ewing, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to this edition of Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.